the market at just a 1.9% of the total.
Mm-hmm. Floor, Mr. Stanley.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon. We've been pleased to have been the firefighters' actuaries for a number of years now. And I want to try to explain our actuarial process. This is our 12th annual actuarial evaluation report for Oklahoma Fire. I think I'm going to start off backward. There's a number of new faces, at least new to me, around the table. And I'd really like to start up where I normally end up.
Okay.
And some clients get a good deal of joy about poking fun at how I do a presentation, particularly when I start at the back. But let me just, what we're doing, and I'm going to start out on page 28. As actuaries, what we do is probability projections. We have a system. We are computer evaluation software is tailored to each client's plan because they're all different. And we have a number of assumptions that we use. The simplest is for people that are already retired. The only assumptions we use are interest to get a present value and mortality. And that's just those two assumptions for anybody who's retired. Now, for anybody who's active, there are a number of other assumptions that come into play. And this includes we're projecting not only mortality, but also what's the probability of them terminating in any given year, becoming disabled in any given year, receiving a pay increase in any given year, until death, way out 50 years from now. And we take all this, we bring it back to, we discount it and bring it to present value at the actuarial evaluation date, which in this case is October 1, 2010. And then it's a matter of, it's sort of a budgetary concept, because what we're doing is taking that present value, we're taking the assets, and we're attempting to have an orderly budgeting process to cover the difference over the future years. Now, there's been a lot of press flying around, and nothing more rapidly flying around than in the state of Florida. But there's a lot of misinformation out there. Most systems unfunded actuarial liabilities, and those are the portion of a past service liability that we don't have assets to cover yet. They're calling it underfunded, and it's not necessarily underfunded at all. It's part of a budgetary process. It's like paying off a mortgage. Just because you have fully paid off your mortgage doesn't mean you're not being properly responsible economically. So the assumptions beginning on page 28, this is what we do. The cost method, normal cost, entry age normal, it's probably used by at least 80% of the plans in the United States. It's the most standard cost method. Under it, what we do, using these assumptions, is we allocate a portion of each member's liability to the past. And it's actuarial math, but what we expect is this normal cost to stay a level percentage of payroll. And if all the assumptions had been exactly on target in the past, and we had always had this system, then all those normal costs would have been a level percentage of pay going all the way back to date of entry into the system, all the way out to date of retirement or drop entry. So that's the cost method. Then you see it, those periods about a third of the way down, those are the periods that we recommended and that you have followed to amortize your mortgages. And you can see that for actives, we're saying let's go 25 years. But inactives, we probably shouldn't be trying to mortgage them out 25 years. They're already gone. And should we be budgeting costs for that, that point in time? And in fact, 15 is, you could argue, is too long. But it's conservative. Each year we quantify and belabor at this meeting our actuarial gains and losses. And what we're saying here is 20 years. Now, if it were a private sector plan, that would be about 5 years. There's a lot of roles in the private sector that are a lot more rapid than in the public sector, and I think improperly so. I think what we have done in the private sector is we've made costs extremely volatile, much, much more volatile than public sector costs. Now, where we are in the public sector now is you're coming off the investment problems in 2008. So you've been in a hole. We smooth it out, but you got to get out of the hole. So you'll see as we get into that part that you're not out yet, and most people aren't. So going on down, a major assumption that's being used is this investment return interest discount. We're saying 8% a year. If anything, I would say that's a little bit high. And if it's a little bit high, that means that we're understating our costs a little bit. That's what the bottom line of that is. This board did not endorse the 8% assumption the last time we went to war over it, but we're still at 8. Then we have our salary increase assumptions. You'll see that underpinning all this is a 3.5% inflation assumption. And that pushes up salaries over time, and it pushes up investment return over time. If we said the long-term inflation assumption was 10%, then theoretically we could have a 15% interest assumption, but our salaries would be going up 13% a year. See how that works? And that would be a lower current cost and a steeper funding curve than what we have. I'm not suggesting anything about that little scenario I just discussed. I'm not suggesting we do that by any means.
Mr. Stanley, could you talk about the 20% write-up method real quick?
Sure. Okay, well, we'll go back into the report. Let's go to page 7. This is my favorite way. I like to bounce back and forth. Well, the 20% write-up method is a way of smoothing out peaks and valleys in the investment returns. And so essentially what we do with that is we start off at 10109 and we have our 20% write-up amount. And we say that's going to earn 8%. The cash flow is going to earn 8% prorated for the period of time it was in the trust. So we expect the actuarial asset value to be whatever that arithmetic produces. We compare that to market, and in this case, this is actuarial and this is market. Mm-hmm. And we say we're going to take 20% of the difference. So we're going to walk 20% of the difference toward market. And so philosophically, that's like say we sort of smooth it over 5 years. But if you look at this table 3 at the bottom of page 7, you can see that as the market was pretty robust right around the ending in 2007, the actuarial smooth value of the line is lower. It didn't go up as much as the market did. And that's what it's supposed to do. But because when the market comes down, as it did in 2008, and it's still a little bit weak, we're not going down as much. So that's what smoothing is.
So in other words, the blue line is kind of our funding,
that's what we use for funding.
And then the red lines are the market value. If we were closer to the private sector, it would be much more volatile like the red lines.
Yeah.
But taking that 20% and smoothing it over 5 years makes it easier budgetarily.
Yeah, it's one tool to help stabilize costs and not have them bouncing around as much as market does.
If we got 8, 9, and 10, if for the next 2 years, let's say we're under the or the market values under our actuarial, what do we have to increase that 20% to 30% or something like that to create a smoother?
No, no, what would happen is that gap would get bigger, and then we're going to take 20% of that gap, whatever it is, so it would be more that we're funding.
I gotcha.
But that's, is that right, Randy?
That's exactly right. If you look at the 2010 bar, and the difference between that and the line, is for funding, we're using the line. In reality, at October 1, 2010, all you had was the bar.
Right.
And so we'll keep doing that. Now, again, if you go back to private sector, there's a good deal of sentiment, or the school of thought, I won't say it's a good deal of sentiment, that in favor of transparency. It's a buzzword. And transparency would say, maybe you ought to be using market. They're getting closer and closer in the private sector, but I think that there are differences in the private and public sector. You really can't go bankrupt.
Right.
You can't be bought out. You've got a lot more permanence than, say, a private sector enterprise might have. So I would argue that smoothing is very desirable.
Yeah. Your employees stay a longer period, you know, so they're going to be here to make up for something. If it's a downfall, the employees are going to be here to make up for that downfall. And it's not like a private company who's sold out or bought out every third or fifth year by another company or something. We're stable.
Right.
Nobody's going to buy the city of
your
McKenna.
Time horizon is a lot longer.
So the amortization, you know, we have much longer time to make up for bad times, and we should be in good times sucking enough away.
Well, and we were doing, this was automatically
we
doing a little bit of that.
If you look at 2007, you know, that's exactly what we were doing.
Yeah. We were pretending we didn't have that.
Right.
Like, it's not a discretionary thing, it's just a mechanical thing. Mm-hmm. Is that good on the smooth?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Going back to page 28 then, briefly. And page 29, you see, these are just all these assumptions that we use to determine the present value of projected benefits for all members. I've summarized here on two pages. The most dominant assumptions are the interest discount, which derives the present value, the salary increase, and the time at which employees retire, because that sets up when we have to start paying and how long we expect to have to pay. Okay? Now let's, if we may, while we're back there, just a second on page 26. This on one page is our summary of what your retirement system is. We designed this plan effective October 1, 1999. We've never had any reason to regret anything we did at that point. I think it's a fine plan. There are richer plans around the state. For sure, there are weaker plans around the state. But the 3% of monthly pay for each year of credited service is sort of the way you think about a retirement system. That would say that if somebody were here 25 years and retired, then they would get 75% of their final average pay for life. Well, and then you get into, well, over what period is the average pay? Well, it's the highest three consecutive of the last 5 years of earnings. And then you define what earnings are. You know, that includes base pay, pickup contributions, overtime pay. And all these decisions were made at some point in the past as to what's included there. Educational incentives, I think, are now required by the state, but But generally, that's the way you think of your plan. You can retire when the sum of your age and service is 70 points, called the rule of 70, and not have any kind of reduction based on your age. There's no early retirement reduction once you've achieved that rule of 70 points. Okay, now if I may, I'd like to go back to, I just wanted to do that because maybe the younger people or the new people on the board, this is where we're going. That's what's underpinning everything that we do, those three pages. Let's go to page one now, please. This is just a summary that we compare each year and compare it to the prior year. And if you look toward the middle of the page, let's talk about the assets. Under item B, as of October 1, 2010, you had $25.6 million in the trust. Well, our smoothing has you at 29.4. So that difference is that difference between that line we were looking at and the graph, and the bar. Now, a lot of our clients, and maybe it's our fault, they think that if they have a good year on market for the year ending 9/30/10, that all news is good news. Well, not really, because remember, you're in the hole.
We're still
and you got to have some excess returns flowing in to get out of the hole. And that hole is the difference between $29.4 and $25.6 million. And but the other requirement, it's a state requirement, is that this smoothing can't be more than, it can't come up with a value at more than 120% of market or less than 80% of market. So it's a corridor. As of October 1, 2009, we were on that corridor. The amount we were using was 120% of market. Now, if you'd had a bad year in the next year, you've got no shock absorbers when you're up against that rail. So what you've done from 10109 to 10110 is you've climbed part of the way out of the hole. You've gone from 120% of market to 115%. And that's good news. Keep it up.
Yeah. It also gives us a bit of a cushion should we need it for next year, but hopefully
exactly.
We're not going to need it.
Now going down to the bottom under item C, that remember I talked about these present values of projected benefits? These are the results of the calculations. And you see for active members, we've got 33.7 is our present value of projected benefits. For inactives, we've got 20.1. And in total, we've got 53.9. Now, your assets, use actuarial value, is 29.4 million up there. So, you funded 55% of the present value of projected benefits. Well, you don't intend to ever fund it all. I mean, if you were equal to this 53.8, there would have had to been somebody mess up really badly, like the actuary, and have you put too much money in, or you might have had a runaway stock market or something. But you would have ended up being overfunded, because this is there's no reason to have funded all the actives benefits when they've only been, some of them have only been here a couple of years. You funded over their careers. Now we then, under this cost method, what we have to do is determine how much of that goes to the past and how much goes to the future. Remember, I was talking about that a minute ago. Well, for the inactives, all of it's past. So that 20.1 million goes into your past service liability pot. Then for each active individually, we calculate how much of it is past and how much of it's future. And when we add them up, just below that 53.8 million, we say our actuarial liability, our past liability, is 42.6 million. You compare that to your 29.4. Okay? And that's the basis for your mortgages. Now let's just go over to page 14. Here are your mortgages. Each year, there's going to be an expense gain or loss, and there's going to be another line added. For example, for the year ending September 30, 2010, you had an $825,000 loss. Pretty nominal when you consider that your present value projected benefits is, even your accrued benefits is over 40 million. So that's a nominal loss. But if you look at all those lines, most of the unfunded liability is due to poor experience. And the dominant culprit typically is investment return less than expected. And if you went and added up all these lines that said actuarial loss or actuarial gain, you'd see that over 12.6 million of the 13.2 million is due to past experience, unfavorable. That's where it came from. It didn't come from liberalizing the plan or anything like that. Okay, now if we can go to, stop me at any time. Let's go to page 3 then.
Because of that smoothing, we're trying to dig out of that 12,000, in essence, that hole.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hole. That's the bad news, but the good news is we didn't go down as badly in our smoothing as the market went down. It's doing what it's supposed to do. Page 3, this is where we summarize the costs. And you see that the city contribution is $1,853,000. Is a little bit more than 25% of pay as compared to 23% in the previous report and 20.5% in the third year ago. That's higher than the city wants, I'm sure. But we've seen it's the 40s and 50s and 60% of pay contribution requirements too. So by that measure, this is pretty civilized. The one thing that this, and one thing the city has insisted on for several years is they see the dollar, but they say we're going to fund the percentage. And fortunately, in most of the years, not the last year, but the prior years, that percentage was more than the dollars. So we set up a credit account, and we said, well, we'll let you use that to help offset cost increases down the road. Well, the state is now, and that's the last paragraph on page 3, they're now saying you've got to use a percentage of payroll contribution because they, I think, had over the years had a number of really small systems around the state that figured out how to get the dollar amount calculated and then give the raises. And the state perceived that they were tweaking their requirements. So they came up, it's terrible timing, you know, when you're trying to recover from the investment problems and so forth, to come along and say, let's do something like this. Because it could reduce the contribution requirement to a plan that needed the contribution badly. A couple of years ago, they had two workshops. I spoke at one of them and spoke against this. Nobody spoke for it, of the actuaries.
60T?
Yeah. And they did anyway. Now, they gave me a little bit longer to get my client. They've been doing it for 2 years on some of the firms. But they're only now saying, you've got to start doing this. Well, what I'm saying is, and what we're really recommending, I think, to all clients, is that let's don't just go from the $1,852,000 to the 25%. Let's make it the larger of those two. So if you go all the way over to, we put a new exhibit in the report as a way to start on this. It's the last page of the report, page 38.
Question.
Sure.
If this were to go to zero, so you have a real loan in the market, I mean, really pile the money in, would that happen? That the city wouldn't have to put any type?
They could, yeah.
That happens all the time in the private.
Well, it's happened with the city of Miami.
Right.
I mean, it's nowhere near there now. So in the 90s, there was a point at which we put in an administrative expense assumption just to keep it from going to zero, because we felt that the city fathers would get to liking that zero too much, and so we needed to keep them doing a little bit of something. And they didn't really have any problem with that, but yeah, it could go to zero.
So then, if they were in a defined contribution plan, it would never go to zero, right?
Well, if it, you know, in the private sector, are you talking public sector?
Yeah.
A typical defined contribution plan in the public sector defines a contribution rate.
Yeah.
And let's say that's 10% of pay. They could amend it, make it 10 to zero, but that'd be the only way I would think. And then they'd have some court cases probably. So basically what we've done back at page 38, we've sort of laid out what we are recommending here, is that you look at this as the greater of those two, and you're going to need to track your payroll. The way we've set this up, and it may not pass muster with Tallahassee, but we've got it set up to start October 1, 2011, this coming October 1, that this comparison be done. I mean, the state's already got some actuarial firms been doing this for 2 years. We sort of slid around.
Where in here does it give you the asset growth or loss, and where does it give you the income growth? We're talking about two different things here.
Talking about unrealized appreciation and then dividends.
Well, actual income from our investments as opposed to the growth. I mean, we're not selling stocks out here to pay our employees. We're taking the income from the investments, right?
Both.
Well, we are selling stocks.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to page...
In a mutual fund, of course, yeah. Okay.
Well, if you go to page 17, at least for the last 2 years, I think this is the answer to your question. The contributions coming in, dividends and interest, realized gains and losses, other things going out, and then the unrealized gains and losses. And then we go from the beginning, 25,369, to 28,189.
So we did a lot better last year than the year before. Then,
everybody
right?
did.
Yeah.
Except Bernie Madoff.
Yeah, yeah, Bernie.
And then on page 19 is a history over the last 13 years, I guess.
Are we assuming an 8% return on the total portfolio? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
I'm not really realizing that either.
No, that's at the bottom of page 19. We haven't have many. I mean, you've got your ups and downs, and then you look at market or you look at the smooth value. I'm under Roman numeral 3 down at the bottom. You know, for example, on our actuarial value, we basically earned 4.6% in the year ending September 30, 2010 against that 8% assumption. Now, market earned 9.1.
That's important.
And it is important because it's climbing out of that hole. We'd like to see a lot more years like that. If you look at the market value column, you see 3 years ago it's down 19. There's the hole. You expect it to be up 8, you're down 19, you got a 27 point. I don't know, we're seeing some clients interested, getting more interested in reducing the investment return assumption.
This is the actual, this is the average.
Year one of two clients we have that are as high as 8. We've got more in the 7.75, we've got some that are moving towards 7.5, moving downward towards 7.5. I think it's probably a good idea, but I don't think we should overreact to the short-term market. This is a 50-year project here.
But you're counting the growth in the portfolio and the income from that portfolio in your 8%?
Yeah. I mean, it's that, if you...
I have a few of this. Randy, I'm showing him your letter of April 28, 2010, last year. We asked him to see what it would cost to lower the assumption. And you can see there what it would have cost last year. Those are the price differences. And it was 1.66% of kind of would cost 1.66% more if we lowered our assumption to 7.75. It would raise the cost by 1.66%, and if it was lowered to 7.5, it would raise the contribution 3.39%.
Pretty much linear.
Yeah.
But going back to this question, if you look at on that page 17, dividends and interest, realized gains and losses, unrealized gains and losses, they all go into a comparison against the 8%. Now, people will argue, and properly so, that 8% is the most common assumption in use. And I concede that it's the most common assumption in use. That doesn't mean it's necessarily right. But I would like it if you were a bit lower. But I don't want us to, any of us, to overreact. I mean, you had a pretty good year. So, keep doing it.
I think historically we're probably 8% should be about the range. I mean,
I've always thought 8 was a touch high.
Yeah, if you look at the historical average, though, it's still not there. But I think now
if your inflation is 3.5%. If your inflation rate is 3.5, which is our assumption, then you look at maybe we can go back to the 20s and look at these statistics. What is the return on government bonds, say? It's risk-free, let's say, and it's going to be, over most time periods, it's going to be more than inflation, so you've got a real return there. And then if you want to dice it a little bit for the next step, you can look at the corporate bonds are going to return a little bit more than government bonds. So there's sort of a risk premium component. And then you compare stocks to corporate bonds, and you come up with a differential, and you say that's my equity return or risk premium, whatever. And that's the building block that you use. What you've got going for you is we use that same inflation assumption as the first step in the salary increase assumption. So if that inflation assumption should be 3 instead of 3.5, then we should lower both our investment return assumption and our salary increase assumption.
But in the real world, that inflation rate's been flat for the last couple of years.
A couple of years, yeah.
And we're still using 3.5.
Yeah, again, this is long-term forecasting. I couldn't argue that 3.5 is better than 3, but I think they're both close to reasonable. 3.5 might be a bit high. We'll see how the Middle East turns out.
Jimmy Carter came back and good at 10.
I like go higher than that. That was our Georgia guy.
Yeah.
Page 5. Here's what we do on our gain loss. This is where we take what we had a year ago and what the bottom line was. And it's a spreadsheet. It's a whole column in a spreadsheet on page 5. Then we work across the columns and we say, okay, let's determine how much of what happened in the last year was due to salary increases different than the assumptions. And what we're saying, what we measured as having happened here in the year ending September 30, 2010, salary increase assumptions were lower than our assumption. That produces an experience gain, reduces the retirement plan cost. You have to almost think of this like it's the opposite of real life. You don't get a raise, that's good news.
It's good news for the pension.
Yeah.
Not for your pocket.
But, you know, what happens, and so that reduced the city's annual contribution by $121,000. We'll go down to the investment return line. You know you earned, what, 9%? You didn't earn 9% on the actuarial value. You earned 4 point something. So that pushes the city's contribution up some. And that was about $87,000. Well, you go through each of these, all the experience together increased the city's contribution by about $61,000. That looks like a pretty stable year. And if you look at the bottom line, we consider that a stable year. $60,000 is not a major disruption in a plan of this size. If you go to the next page, page 6, we sort of explain some of what I was just saying. Covered payroll only went up about 1.5% on average. And we're expecting under the assumptions almost 6. So there's the experience gain.
Are you assuming most of these people are going to retire in 20 years? Is that the fact that you're using?
We're assuming that they will retire mostly when they get that rule of 70.
Yeah.
Age plus service equals 70 forms. Let's see.
I think Tierney had us change that to rule of 80. We're assuming a rule of 80.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I mean, look, we were there. And
because that's what the GRS question.
I don't understand what you just said. Tierney.
I don't think we did. He tried to get us there. What we're assuming, I think it's on page 29, we're assuming that 3/4 of the members will retire when they get through the 70. If you have somebody hired when they're 25, when 20 years later they'll have, it'll be 45 with 20 years service.
They won't
be
eligible.
65
yeah.
points.
Right.
So you got to go 22.
2.5 more years.
And then you're rule of 70, and we're assuming that 3/4 of the people will either retire or enter drop at that point.
Okay. I thought that we had changed that to what Tierney had said, because Tierney is the guy that the League of Cities, he's the League of Cities actuary that the city hired back. We had changed our assumption rate to 7.75, okay? And then the city really didn't like it. They didn't like the increased costs, so they hired an outside League of Cities actuary, Mike Tierney, out of Jacksonville, to come in and look over our whole plan and see where he could make it cheaper. And so he came up with a lot of suggestions, or a number of suggestions, and we took maybe half of them, or three or four of them, of his suggestions.
I'd have to go back and look, but I know we fought against a number of them. There was no pretense about it. He was there purely to decrease costs.
Right.
Whether it was justified or not.
Right. What will be the effect on this plan if the governor causes this drop thing to drop?
Get rid of it?
Yeah. That would mean future people wouldn't be eligible for it. I assume.
A drop has no cost if you don't influence. If it's proper to say people are going to retire at rule of 70, if you layer a drop on top of it that doesn't influence them into doing anything different except that rule of 70 they enter drop, and if your investment return allocations on the drop assets are what the trust earns, then you've got a no-cost drop. Mm-hmm. So the question really is, should, if drop is eliminated, how will that affect the retirement pattern of active members? And I think they would probably work a bit longer, and that would reduce costs because you've changed their retirement pattern that way. You'd never know for sure when you do something like that what it's going to do. But I think I would expect them to work a little longer and not enter drop.
Yeah.
One page 9. Table 5. That's a picture of this past service liability and the actuarial or smooth value of assets. And this is the most commonly used measure that you're going to read about in the trade publication as of funding progress. And at this point, you can see over the right side of the graph how the liabilities have been growing, but the assets haven't been keeping up. And at the end of 2010 here, the asset value is about 70% of the liability. Where would we like it to be? 50 is too low and 100 is too high. I'd like it to be 80. At 70, you're sort of at the whim of the market. It wouldn't take maybe 3 years, like last year was, and you would be above 80 probably. So you're 70% funded as far as your unfunded liability.
And how is that trend increasing or decreasing?
Recent trend is decreasing. I mean, going back to 2008. But I'd say more recent trend for the year ending September 2009, most plans went up a little bit.
Except
not much.
Except yesterday.
I've been out of town. I haven't kept up to that.
1.9% decrease.
How much?
1.9.
1.9. Well, then we knew it. Was that attributable to pretty much the Japan?
What's that now?
The stock market trap.
I think it was mostly the Libyan thing.
What? Yeah. Down toward the bottom of page 9, one of the typos Randy alluded to up front, in the next to the last paragraph where it says the prepaid position, that should be decreased. We will change that. And this, you may recall, that's how much more the city has put in on a cumulative basis, adjusted for interest, more than we've asked. And so that's their savings account. it decreased last year, but in years prior to last year, I think it had increased. But it went from $512,360. And the board's consistently said, I think it's pretty much theirs to use it whenever they want, right?
What's that?
This prepaid.
Yeah.
Asset. Now another little pot of money is we've got a reserve account for future benefit enhancements under Chapter 99-1. And that is now up at September 30 to $1,673,000 at the bottom of page 9. I would encourage you to try to figure out how to spend that. Where this comes from is that it's the excess, it's premium tax revenues under Chapter 175 greater than they were for 98. And then under Chapter 99-1, which was the first bill Jeb Bush signed, those excesses are to be used first to get your plan up to minimum standards. Yours is. And then after that, to use it to have some enhanced benefits of some kind.
How do the enhanced benefits affect future liabilities?
There's a couple of ways you can do it, and that's what I've been, you've heard at several meetings talking about the share plan. That way the money that is in there is divided and goes into a share account, and like a COLA fund, you know, we could include the retirees, that way they get a COLA and the actives get this going into their account, and that way if the money is not there next year, then the money doesn't go into the fund. If you give an automatic 1% or 3% COLA, you have to fund for that, and that has to be made every year. Whether you have, if the investment returns are not there, or the money from the state is not there, if you have a 3% in your plan, you have to come up with the money for that, to fund that 3%. Mm-hmm. If you set it up as a share plan, if the money's there, then it gets distributed. If the money's this much, then that much gets distributed. If it's this much, then that much gets distributed. You know,
yeah,
so if it's a low year, right, and it's no impact on the, you know, it's no impact, negative impact on the city. Basically, if the money's there, it gets divided. If it's not there, it doesn't get spent, and mm-hmm. and their COLA for that year would be a lower amount.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of plans are going, a lot of cities are going, because it's of no cost to the city. Randy, I have one question, and if we go to page 13, and this is more, especially now that I've got our finance director in here, if you look at the third line from the bottom, it says interest for 1 year lag, okay? John, what we did several years ago is this is a year behind. We do it a year behind, so it's easier for you to budget. So we're always 1 year behind. That way you're kind of, this is for next year. This budget plan is starting October 1. You'll have to start funding according to this report. To me, that seems like a lot of money, $150,000 and $148,000, $155,000. That seems like a lot of money to pay for that benefit. And if we're funding it sufficiently, I mean, we would be finding out now how much we have to put in for the current year we're in. So it would be more of a budgeting, more difficult to budget accordingly, because you're halfway through the year before you find out what you need to budget for that year. But it seems like to me if we could take some money in a reserve account, you know, to help for a bad year, put some money in it, then we could save. I mean, and all three plans are paying that. It seems like a huge savings. I don't know if you would be interested in going, you know, getting rid of the 1 year lag and saving that money. but I think it's...
Something to look at.
Something to look at, something to think about, because to me, it just seems like a waste of a lot of money.
It's not a waste.
Not a waste, but...
Because there's a threat.
Yeah.
That could, in some years, like in 08, that was probably the best investment you trust had.
That's right.
And that's why I said you need the reserve account, so in a bad year like
yeah,
that,
well,
you're
and
not...
you've got the reserve account already. I mean, it's a prepaid asset. You've got $300,000 sitting there.
Okay.
So you, I guess it doesn't have to be all or nothing either. I mean, you could say, okay, last year my contribution was roughly $1.8 million, so I'm going to put a fourth of that in October 1.
Right.
Another fourth January 1, another fourth April 1, and by then I'm pretty sure I can true it up and get around to, you know, you've got a budget headache if you don't have the lag, but anything you can do to have less of a lag, then you reduce the interest cost. Now, one thing I didn't hit on when we were over on the gain loss page, and I'll do it while we're back here, is this 99.1 minimum issue on page 16. There are two sources of state money that have come back over the years. Chapter 175, and then there was a supplemental 175. And this, if you look up the top, or the bar, is, say, the $240,000. That says that in that column, if the state money is more than $240,000, it's going to go for additional benefits, but the city gets the first $240,000 from that source. Now, when this started, there was about almost $19,000 coming out of the supplemental or the secondary distribution. And we've been assuming that that will continue, but it's not continuing. So, in fact, there was none in the year ending September 09. So, we're taking that out as an assumption. And if you go back, that's part of the reason for the cost increase. We're no longer subtracting that $19,000. Well, we had some classes sort of got tangled up with that a year or two ago. And we said, well...
In Tallahassee, aren't they thinking about cutting out the state contributions to pension plans?
They're thinking about everything, who knows what'll happen, but... what I was just describing is what it is currently. Is that a portion of these premium taxes on homeowners insurance went to help fund benefits for firefighters.
Yes.
And you could have done it another way, and I don't know whether this is the direction the governor's leaning or not, but you could step a statewide firefighter plan and make the local city plans unnecessary and use that same funding source, the premium taxes on homeowners insurance. Louisiana, for example, I think has 8 statewide retirement systems. That's the way, in their case, they had deputy sheriff's pension plans that didn't have any money in them. The plans were not funded properly, and so they did theirs with statewide systems. Florida did theirs by pushing back some of the premium tax monies to the local plans.
Isn't that what they have in place? Is it 175 IRS exactly what they got in place now? Well, firefighters.
I'm sorry?
They have a statewide plan in place right now.
But it's not mandatory. It's statewide for counties and counties, but municipalities can opt out of...
Yeah, if they can opt out.
Well, I think what he's saying is that you wouldn't be able to opt out.
I'm not speculating that that's where things will end up. I'm just talking. Maybe they could end up there.
Can I ask a question on page 19? This investment expense is $60,000. What is that?
Page 19.
19, up there at the top.
Alicia, you probably answered that better than I could.
Sorry, I didn't hear the question.
The $60,000 investment expenses last year, I guess it's for the investment consultant mostly. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the custodian?
I think most of that is attributable to the disability, or some of that is we had a disability, and whenever you have a disability, the lawyer's fees go.
I wouldn't have thought attorney's fees would have been in this thing.
It should be 60,000?
Yeah.
Because Bogdan is 40 alone.
No, Bogdan's 25.
Is it 25? Then maybe it is.
Siegel's 40. Siegel's 40. Milliman used to be 40.
Yes.
That seems kind of low.
But Bogdan is 25.
I think one of our investment accounts is Vantage Mutual Fund, is that correct?
Vanguard?
Vanguard. Mm-hmm. Do we factor in their costs at all? Normally that's about 1%.
It's a lot less than that. We're only paying like 15, 20 basis points.
I think the answer is probably that's not included. That's not part of the 60,000. Because mm-hmm. the mutual funds all report net.
Yeah.
And Vanguard is a very inexpensive mutual fund. That, I think, is pretty much it. I could stop briefly on page 35. Some of you will recall that we set up this gain-sharing arrangement to take a portion of excess investment returns and fund some kind of COLA. And our timing was not real good. There's a state requirement that you have to have cumulative favorable experience in order to take some of this excess investment return. So we have a bar that we've got to calculate. And at the bottom of page 35, that one says that we've got a cumulative experience loss of $15 million, which basically says you can't transfer any money to a COLA fund until that number is zero or negative. It has to be a cumulative experience gain. And then that has to be a cumulative experience gain remaining after you transfer it. So it's we're doing the calculations just in case, but...
So in other words, we have to make $15 million, we have to come out of the whole $15 million before any of that excess gain, any of those excess investment gains can be used.
Yeah.
That was one of the questions from GRS. So that's, yeah. And the chances of that happening are, that's...
What are we at, 1.6 right now on our excess gain? Like, coming out of the hole, what are we, 1.6 towards that? I know we're 15 million, according to this, in the hole. How far are we?
How much did we pull out of the hole this year?
Yeah. Oh, so it should be right there on that same page. Let's see. Well, we'd have to compare this page to last year's page like this. But it's pretty much the same gain or loss as we've got over on page... page 5. And on page 5 we said $825,000, you see that in the left column?
Yes, sir.
That's how much deeper we went into the hole last year. It's not a big drop, but it's still a little bit more of a hole.
That is on a scale of $25 million, basically. You're shorted by...
Yeah, I would say, I might say it's on the scale against the 13 million.
Okay, 13 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, Randy, you mentioned some comments that another actuarial firm who's working for the state suggested, I think, last year.
Yeah.
We've addressed, they had 9 comments. Well, they had 14 comments, I guess. We've addressed a number of them in here.
Okay.
The others, they're either quibbling over methodology or assumptions. And we think that both of those can better be addressed through an experience study. A lot of your experience like mortality, is just not statistically credible.
Right.
But it doesn't mean we shouldn't update it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would encourage you to consider having us do one of those this year and see how many of these we can take off the list. And out of the 9 that I see here, we've taken 4 of them off, 5 of them off this, I think.
Okay.
This round.
Do you mind if we just go through those right quick?
Okay.
Number 1, the report should separate out realized and unrealized asset appreciation.
Yeah, we did that on page.
Okay.
17.
That's done.
Yeah.
Who's that list coming from? The state?
This.
Mm-hmm.
This is, remember we had the pension committee meeting, and this is what GRS, they hired GRS to, well actually the state hired GRS to go over some of the plans, and then the city hired GRS to do the same thing. And they came up with these things. Member statistics and data reconciliation should separately identify members who elect the drop. A reconciliation of the total drop account reserve from year to year should be provided.
Okay, the reconciliation of the drop account from year to year is at the bottom of page 17.
Okay.
Same page. I'm looking for those. On page 25, we got a reconciliation of drop participants.
25?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, number 3, the asset method should be reviewed in light of
now,
this.
Now, items 3, 4, 5, and 7 should better be addressed through the experience study.
Okay.
And of course,
now
6
has never happened. In my 10 years on the board, no one has ever elected. It says the report does not describe the probability of utilizing the early retirement provisions with the rule of 70. We have never even had anyone inquire on utilizing the early retirement provisions. They almost always make the rule of 70 before they're eligible for the early retirement.
On page 29, under retirement age, we basically said we're not assuming they're going to take it. So that's our take, that takes care of number 6.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. It's
so that's in the nature of a clarification and not a change.
Okay.
Well, that's pretty much what I wanted to cover on the actuarial report.
Okay.
All right, just the other thing is, here it says that Exhibit 9, page 2, states that 75% are expected to retire when the rule of 80 is reached. It's not the rule of 80, it's the rule of 75.
Rule of 70.
Rule of 7.
We'll go back and look at that and just go all the way back to the tyranny stuff.
Okay.
But I think we had rule of 80 in here, but we weren't doing it.
Yeah, that was tyranny's recommendation to, you know, we did that not because we wanted to, but because tyranny.
So all in all, I think it's a pretty positive report.
Yeah.
It's you made some progress on your investment return in the hole. You know, the bad news on low salary increases is good news for the pension fund.
That's good news.
So, you know, if you go from the top to the bottom of page 3 or page 5, it's pretty stable in total. You get impact on the city contribution of $61,000.
Okay. You have the mortality table. Should we, we've been discussing changing that for years. And what we were, the thing is, when we change the mortality table, we have an older mortality table, the newer mortality tables typically are, will raise the cost. And what we were, we've talked about this for years and years, actually. What we were waiting for is a good positive year in which to change it. That way it would be less of an impact on the city, on the contributions and everything.
And then that's exactly what we recommend, is that, I mean, we like to have a good news window,
right,
to do something like update the mortality table, but we don't want to get too far behind.
Right.
And then we're going to have some it's called cost too much to update. But we're ignoring the funding issue. I would recommend that we update it.
Okay, and that could probably come out in the experience study as well.
You and the city are probably going to want to say, okay, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. How much does it cost?
Right.
And I generally like to get the tables updated in a period of euphoria.
Right.
So, you know, things are going well, come better than expected. Let's go ahead and do this.
So you think we should still wait for another, hopefully next year will be a good year, and then?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think we probably should go ahead because of the state and then GRS kicking on.
Right, well, we'll discuss it. Do we want to do, how much is an experience study going to cost?
They usually come out about what an annual actuarial evaluation.
We did one 10 years ago. And is the general plan doing an experience study?
They're kind of in school with that right now. We're waiting for our actuary report.
Okay. Being that we haven't had one done in 10 years, I think that it probably would be appropriate. And that's going to take all of our assumptions and look at them and see not only are our assumptions matching up with the actual occurrences, you know, our salary increases, are they averaging what we say they're going to average? Are the people retiring when we say they're going to retire? And
part of it is that this system is not big enough to have a lot of statistical credibility in some of this stuff. For example, retirements. You'd think so, but those get influenced by the economy too.
Right, and that the laws that are changing, you know, that the potential changes in the laws that are coming up are going to have a big impact on retirement, I think.
So you've got a fairly small system, and then you've got extraneous forces like the economy or Tallahassee. And then that can influence your turnover, your retirement. Certainly influences your pay increases. Then you get something like mortality table. That's basically just saying this is what we've got and this is what we need to go to. It doesn't have anything to do with how many deaths you had.
Right.
Specific to this system. So I think we can do an experience study for somewhat less than our rule of thumb, you know. But basically, it's 5 years of experience versus a valuation, mm-hmm. And we got all the data. I would think we could do it. Come in under that. But, you know, you could sit right here as a board and say, yes, let's update the mortality table.
Yeah, I know we're gonna have to change the mortality table. We've been talking about it for years and years.
Well, I think you're on the 94 table.
Right.
You know, generally, new mortality tables come out about every 10 years. Mm-hmm. And they have consistently shown increased longevity until the last one. And it didn't show any increased longevity for females at all. It just says,
that's not good for you, ladies. You're not going to live as long.
And, you know, the speculation is that women are in the workforce more every day, the same stresses, and then that pattern of consistently improving longevity has been interrupted.
They used to get a better rate for car insurance, now it's about the same.
Is it really?
I forgot about the car insurance.
Yeah. You know, the only thing I can see on here that just really hits me between the eyes is this history of investment net yield rates. That's really bad news for the last 2 years.
What page are
you on? 0.02, page 19.
You're looking at 0.2, right?
0.3, and then this year we're at 4.6.
That's the smooth value.
Yeah.
I beg your pardon?
That's the smooth value. I mean,
the other one, the actual is on the other side.
Yeah, the big thing in the actual is the negative 19.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you combine that negative 19 and the following year at less than one, you know, that's not climbing out of that hole very well.
But you go back to the actuarial basis and you see 07, 06, 05, we were above.
Yeah.
You know, so we're climbing out of the hole, like he says. You know, we're halfway there, better than halfway there. We just need another year like this, and we'll, or another year like last year. In fact, if the market's just closed today and stayed closed until September 30th, we'd be doing good. But we can't do that again. Yeah, I think we're already up over 8%. So, well, is there any other interest in? I think we should do it. I'd like to see an experience study. That way, you're taking an in-depth, John. You're taking an in-depth look at all these pension plans, aren't you?
Well, that's our intent. Yes, RFQ down the street, actually.
I think that the experience study would help in that too.
What study are we working with? 94?
Mortality table is 94.
What impact would this study do for the members and also for the city? Not only financially, but whatever results they find.
If you start out with the premise that we would end up recommending reducing the 8% investment return assumption, and if we did that, we would reduce the inflation assumption correspondingly and the salary increase assumption correspondingly. The net of those three is a cost increase.
Is each one of them a cost increase?
No, reducing the salary increase is a cost decrease.
Right.
But it's typically not as strong a decrease as the investment return is an increase.
Right.
So you put them in the same pot and you've got some increase. On the demographic stuff, we'd go back through our gain loss and look at what happened each year and see if we felt like there's some fine-tuning that should be done. I think things that jump out that we've had forever, if you look at page 29, we've got 10% of the, we're saying that 10% of the disabilities are service incurred and 10% of the pre-retirement death is service incurred. That doesn't look right for a public safety plan. You expect more than half the deaths and disabilities to be service incurred. So I think we probably inherited that when we
inherited
those two plans and put them together. I mean, you would expect those to be flip-flop some, and that's going to increase cost a little bit. Good question. I don't see any potential right off the bat to make the city any happier with experience day. Doesn't mean you shouldn't have it.
Right.
Do you do an RFP to do that too, or do you just automatically go?
If we could do an RFP, but usually the actuary does it in conjunction with the consultant. Don't you work in conjunction with the consultant?
Yeah.
Do most of these plans have a disability provision in the pension plan?
Yeah. Sure. They don't have a separate LTD kind of.
That's interesting.
Same thing on death. I mean, the death benefits for service incurred are generally pretty rich.
Yeah. Are firemen covered under workers' comp?
Yes.
They are? So they got a death benefit there, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's very good. Like $250 bucks or something, right? Randy, if I could, before you close, I'd like to brief the board a little bit about something that's going on with my organization.
Sure.
We've been in discussions with another actuarial firm about a merger. The firm is Neihardt out of Indianapolis. They're about 65 years old. We're 28 years old. They really have no presence in the Southeast, and they have less concentration on public sector plans than we do. Ours are almost all our clients are public sector. Theirs are about 50-50, I think. And they do the public sector, that a lot of the public sector they do is post-retirement medical. They have offices in Indianapolis, Chicago, Kansas City. I've made sure that if this thing goes through, and I think it will, that it's seamless. Clients are going to notice no difference in fees or anything else. I would still be around for a good 3 years. They're talking and aside about, well, we'll see if we can keep him longer than that, but they might not like it when everything goes down. But So if this happens, it could happen by the end of this month. I mean, we don't have anything signed yet. And the Atlanta office would remain the Atlanta office, and I would be the director of the Southeast. So it's fairly exciting for me, except it's going to be a different way of life after spending all these years agreeing with all the decisions that were made.
Okay.
But I want you to know about it.
Okay.
In case you hear at a conference or something, but it's not a done deal.
So
I think
you would
it's
stay,
likely to be a good done deal.
Right. You haven't. I know there was one departure. Has there been any other departures in your office?
No.
So it would be pretty much the same staff.
We will be, once we get past that line of whose wallet it's coming out of, we will be adding one person right away and then a second person within a year or so. The person who left, Jonathan Craven, was, you guys, a lot of you met him and know him.
Right.
He was the third guy in the office. Had some strengths, had some weaknesses, as we all do.
Right.
Could not have picked the worst time to leave.
Right.
But he did. We wouldn't try to replace him with a clone, but we would try to get somebody roughly of the same experience and qualifications.
Okay.
Not necessarily do the same thing.
How long has Franz been with? Franz is the one who...
Franz is about 60 years old, and with the exception of his postgraduate work in math and a couple of years at another firm, he spent the rest of his life working with me. And he said that he's going to be around as long as I'm going to be around.
Okay. All right. Well, the experience study, do we want to do it or not? Or should we want to do an RFP or...
Well, in 10 words or less, what exactly is this experience?
The experience study goes back, we have all these assumptions. Okay, we're assuming a salary increases of X amount. We're assuming these people are going to retire at 75% when they reach the rule of 70. We're assuming that we're going to make 8% investment returns where, you know, we make all these assumptions. And what the experience study does is it goes back and looks at what we actually did. Not what we're assuming going forward, but what actually happened. And then it'll show us where some of our assumptions are off, and some of our assumptions are going to be off, and some of them are going to be right on. The ones that are right on, we would obviously leave alone, and the ones that are off, we would, and even the ones that are off, doesn't mean we have to change them, but at least we'll know, you know, and we can keep a tighter eye on them. Mm-hmm. And even if it is the assumption rate, you know, just because it says that we're not making 8% doesn't mean that we have to lower our assumption rate.
Yeah.
But it's going to tell us what our actual experience is.
On the investment experience, you basically got it.
Yeah.
On this page.
Yeah.
On demographic assumptions.
Yeah, how many terminations, how many people quit each year, how many people...
What we've got for each of those years says that we expected 8 and we had 10, and here's the impact on the bottom line. It does, but it stops before it gets to the issue, well, what do you change it to? Should it be service-based or should it be age-based? And how much of a change do you want to make? Because you got to consider the environment when something like this happens, and you don't want to over-adjust.
Right.
Well,
Mr. Stanley, you might have already said this or stated this somewhere, but what is the discount rate you use to determine present value of benefits?
What is it? Mm-hmm. That's the 8%.
Oh, it's the 8?
Yeah. It serves a dual role. It's the expected return on assets, mm-hmm. and it's the discount rate that we use to determine the present value.
Mm-hmm. I think you made a good point. You could probably argue many people could argue very different rates, you know, depending on depending on what you read and, mm-hmm. and that, you know. And because it is a long haul.
It is, and you know, but you do it with a building block, right, that I sort of went through. And you do it, and you have some input from your investment.
Yeah, so. The asset allocation plays in that too. Sure. You know, if you want to add a little more risk,
mm-hmm. but
a lot of people think, you know, when you say add a little more risk for more better returns, risk means risk. You know, and that means you might not get those returns as well.
And your riskier investments typically have higher expenses.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Well, I wonder if we've got enough diversification in our pension plan as a percentage of the total market value.
That's the other issue, too, though, is with a plan our size is so small that it's hard to diversify as much as we would like to, because there are minimums in many of these investment vehicles. There are minimums. They want a $1 million minimum, you know, and we don't have that kind of money.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, the experience that you're called with the city just, the council just passed, is we're going to go out for RFQ for an actuarial study for all of our pension plans just to look at the cost 5, 10, 20 years out. So there's about 13 or 14 different factors that we're actually looking at. And I don't know how that plays into what you decide, but we're looking at, you know, gaining some information on the sustainability of the plans. And so that the council at the last meeting actually approved that. We've got the RFQ out on the streets at this point right now.
To take a look at that.
Yeah.
Is
it
that pension investments?
Sorry?
Where can I get a copy of it?
We can send it.
Okay, I'm sure I can find it.
Yeah, it's been posted to the Vanstar. I haven't looked to see if I don't know if you're listed or on the Vanstar or not, but if you are, then it's not. We can get
it. I think we are.
Are you going to institutional investment companies?
We'll put it out to actuaries, whoever's on the Vanstar. We've got a listing of all people we actually send to and notify that the RFQ has actually been posted. It's on our website, on the city's website.
Okay, well, shall we table it till the next meeting then, discuss it at the next meeting, or do we want to go with it? Or you're in the middle of doing your actuarial reports now. It'd probably be better to wait till summer anyways when they...
Yeah, I mean, if I had a vote, I'd vote to table it.
Okay.
And then have us do it instead of somebody else.
Right.
Because we've got all the data.
Yeah. I agree. All right, we'll discuss it. We'll see what this RFP is going to encompass, and then we'll make a decision going forward, because it's all the actuarial firms are going crazy right now, because right now is when their heavy load is, because they've got all these actuarial reports to do, and you know. By May, that should be slowing down. I would say May, June, that should slow down considerably, and they'll have a lot more time. All actuaries will have a lot more time by that time of the year. All right. Randy, did you have anything else, or did anyone else have anything they would like to questions about the report, or... I have one question about disability. We had one disability vet, and I'm looking at page 5.
The rest of these.
You said those new pages are coming for these reports, right?
Yeah.
There's some typos, just a few typos in.
I was just going to get the city manager. So when you get one.
I need a couple of them to go to the state.
he's sending new pages are in the mail. Well, what we're going to do is take these old pages out with the typos on them, put the new pages in there, and I'll leave them with Alicia. I'd rather give him one with the new corrected pages than have the one place that says 2008 instead of 2009.
You had your white app right there?
But no, I'll leave them with Alicia as soon as the new pages get in, then we'll distribute them to the city manager and everybody. So, or, you know, if he wants to take some of the printed copies for now, that's fine.
Well, I think Alicia's put it out on the net.
Yeah.
I just wanted to hear what I said.
Okay, but I'd rather, you know, let's just have these.
Not yet, because the board hasn't accepted the report.
Okay.
And they're in the mail, so they should be here this week.
What was your question?
On page 5, where it says disability, added 24,000, 25,000. Is that because we had one disability this year? Because last year's it was only like $800.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, the disability probabilities add up to less than a half of the disability per year, you know. Life.
Right.
It's either got to be done or an integral number. And then that does, that's part of it. And the other part is if the disability benefit turned out to be larger for some reason than we were expecting.
Okay.
Where the expectation is a composite and the actual is one person.
Okay. All right. Okay. Any other questions?
All right, at least you had a good point, though. Are you going to accept this report?
Yeah, we'll accept it. With the,
that's a good point.
With the new pages coming better.
And they should have next week.
Okay. All right. Any more questions on the report?
Do we have to vote on accepting?
Yes. Okay, with that, I would like to entertain a motion to accept the report that Mr. Stanley just presented to us with the new pages to correct the typographical errors.
So moved.
Motion by Fred Starr, second. Would you like to second this, Rita?
I'm thinking. I guess so, yeah.
Okay. If there's no opposition to a unanimous vote, seeing and hearing none, the report is accepted. All right. Are there any other issues other under general business that anyone would like to discuss? Seeing and hearing none, the meeting is adjourned at 3:36.
I need an excused absence for next month. I'm going to be in China.
So. Okay. Excused.
It's funny when I return at 9:41.
It was nice to meet you.
I'm in the airport.